This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. At Indiana University Northwest, this coming Friday, 10 faculty members are going to present a series of 8-minute-long TEDx-style talks to help enlighten the campus and the community about the very important work and the impact of faculty scholarship. In fact, it is entitled The Celebration of Faculty Research. And to tell us more about the program coming up on Friday, we have the Associate Executive Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, Cynthia Odell, with us. And Chancellor Odell, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Oh, happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about the history of this organization. It's an annual event, and this, of course, this year it's being done by Zoom, and anybody can sign up, I guess, to actually take a chance to see this. Will you tell us more about how this all got started, as well as fill us in on the participants for this year's virtual event?
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to. So the event actually got started during the IU Bicentennial. And so during the IU Bicentennial, all of the IU campuses held a celebration for faculty research, and each campus was allowed to decide how they wanted to go about doing that. And so a faculty committee at IU Northwest designed the style that we use, which I'll tell you about in just a second. And everybody loved the event so much that we decided that we wanted to make it an annual event from that point on. And so, as you mentioned, our first event took place in person at the new Arts and Sciences building on campus. This year we're virtual, which really is a great opportunity to reach an even broader audience. The community is always invited, but it's a little bit easier to attend when you just have to click a link to get access. So what the faculty helped design was a series of TED-like talks. So they allow for this wonderful showcasing for the faculty to present their current research, great ideas that they're working on, and then they're targeted at a general audience, and they're 8 minutes long. So that's probably the hardest part for the faculty is to keep it to 8 minutes because they're so excited about what they do and have so much to say. But we do keep them to 8 minutes. When we were in person, we had the full TED Talk timer, where we would so this time, because it's virtual, we're able to they were able to craft it a little bit more carefully.
Well, they've had to work extra hard at being be sure that they can keep it within the time limit, I'm sure, this time around.
We should
mention, before you go through the list of the participants this time, you'll recognize some names. We have had at least a couple of these IU faculty members on Regionally Speaking in the past for different topics, and this quite a variety of talent and educational research, and in turn goes on the IU Northwest campus. Will you fill us in on participants for this year's Zoom event?
Absolutely. So the first speaker, so they're in alphabetical order, they're represented in alphabetical order. So the first speaker will be Ilka Azimi from the School of Business and Economics. And she's going to be sharing some new research she's working on, focused on luxury customers' perception of mobile multi-channel marketing. So she's a marketing professor, so naturally that fits with her. The next piece will be Jeremiah Hulspa-Spofford from the School of the Arts. And he's going to talk to us about floating museums. I believe those are from Chicago. Dialogic monuments and radical museologies through the lens of Claire Bishop. So I'm looking forward to that one as well. Next, we have also from the School of Business and Economics, Tin-Shun Lin and Sabir Bandiopadhyay, who are going to be focused on the topic of COVID-19 and whether COVID-19 has impacted the confidence of Northwest Indiana businesses. And this is from some findings they have from the 2020 Business Confidence Index. Mm-hmm. Anya Machwakev from the Department of History, Philosophy, and Political Science and Religious Studies in our College of Arts and Sciences is going to be presenting on Islamic headscarves, a case of Danish values. She's just coming back from an extended sabbatical overseas, and so we're excited to hear that as well. Constance Obici from the School of Nursing in the College of Health and Human Services will be talking about sustaining the national healthcare system. Next, we have David Parnell from the Department of History, Philosophy, Political Science, and Religious Studies in the College of Arts and Sciences. And he is going to focus on why ancient authors conducted sexual smear campaigns against powerful women. So one of our historians. Micah Pollack from the School of Business and Economics is going to, again, focus on COVID-19 from a slightly different perspective. He's looking at in-person K through 12 school instruction and how it contributed or didn't contribute to the spread of coronavirus in Indiana. Sharon Pratt from our School of Education, sort of a nice fit, the two of them coming next to each other, is going to look at students navigating different kinds of science textbooks, so multimodal, nonlinear textbooks. Her area of expertise is reading instruction. So. Daniele Rosso from the Department of Mathematics in the College of Arts and Sciences is going to teach us a little bit about paths on a cylinder, visualizing the solutions to a functional equation. So, and then finally, Maureen Rutherford from our Department of Psychology, the College of Arts and Sciences, is going to be looking at her research and her piece is entitled Fishing for New Treatments for Anxiety Disorders. So she does lots of work on she's a neuroscientist, and so does work on the neuroscience of anxiety disorders.
We had this great opportunity in the past, I know, to speak with Professors Rutherford and, of course, with Professor Pollack. In fact, Professor Pollack has a very keen view on the pandemic, because he puts out a very regular on social media update on the status of the coronavirus, not only in Northwest Indiana, but across the states. It'll be interesting to hear what he has to say with his take on more school districts, if they can reopen for in-person learning again. We know some are already making plans in that direction, but they haven't done so yet. So it'll be interesting to hear what Professor Pollack has to say about that. And so we do see that a lot of the professors, not all, but a lot of the professors do bring in the coronavirus pandemic into their research and into their results, and they're certainly going to bring that out in their Zoom talk on Friday.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And many of our faculty conduct research that is locally or regionally focused. Mm-hmm. So, and you see some of that here. And then also you obviously see some that is much more nationally and internationally focused as well.
Well, certainly. I mean, nobody had thought that anybody would at the IU Northwest campus would even looking into the possibility of scholarly research into Islamic headscarves. And we know we're going to hear that for sure in the discussions that will come up online on Zoom on Friday, to be sure.
Absolutely.
How long did it take to have to line up all these, I guess, in a way, physical connections that will have to be made by Zoom to be able to get everybody together lined up in a row so that when you sign in ahead of time and then get a chance to view on Zoom on Friday to be able to catch all this?
Well, so one of the neat things we were able to do is to make use of our new facility at IU Northwest. It's being hosted by our Center for the Scholarship for Teaching and Learning, and they have a new room that is a media production room.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one of the campus's first big uses of it. It had its ribbon cutting ceremony this spring already, so this spring semester. But we asked the faculty who were participating, all of these faculty were chosen by their faculty colleagues to present. But we asked them to participate using the media production room that we just have developed at IU Northwest. And so we've spent the last about 3 weeks working with the faculty, getting them ready, getting their PowerPoint presentations ready so that they're all ready for Friday.
That's great. Now, is this the first opportunity to use this new facility, or has it been used maybe on a not quite as large a scale before?
Correct. That's correct. Yes. Yeah. So the intent for it is to have a wide variety of uses and for faculty to make recordings in their classroom for their classes to be used, that kind of thing. But this is probably the first big wide-scale use of it, yeah. So we're excited about that.
That's great. Indiana University Northwest is going to offer the annual event, which is entitled A Celebration of Faculty Research, on Friday morning. And it'll be done by way of Zoom. And Vice Chancellor O'Dell, will you fill us in and let everybody know how they can sign up for this so they can view it beginning on Friday morning at 9 o'clock?
Yes, absolutely. So, and as you mentioned, it is free, open to the public. We encourage everyone to join us. And all you have to do is go to our webpage, www.iun.edu/faculty-research.
Mm.
And you'll be right there.
A very simple address to have to type in and get signed up and be ready for that event. And Chancellor O'Dell, thank you very much for talking about this today. A great lineup of professors, associate professors, assistant professors who will be showing off their research virtually, I guess, for the public and the world at large if you catch the Zoom event coming up here. Once again, it's entitled, from IU Northwest, A Celebration of Faculty Research. And it'll be held Friday morning, the 19th. And we've been talking with Cynthia O'Dell, who is the Associate Executive Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at IU Northwest. Thank you for being with us, and the best of luck to everybody involved in this presentation coming up on Friday.
Thank you.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Purdue Northwest scholars and community experts are going to get together on March 22nd to continue their discussions on ways to deal with the post-COVID world and how we can reinvent ourselves if necessary. And we'll find out about the next of the series of On the Other Side, which deals with cybersecurity. With us to talk about it is Tim Winders. He's the Vice Chancellor at Purdue University Northwest for cybersecurity, actually for information services is what the title says. And he's with us to talk about this upcoming next in the series of On the Other Side. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. I'm happy to be here today.
Now, as part of your job as the Vice Chancellor for Information Services at Purdue Northwest, you get to deal with these issues every single day. And I understand, too, that every one of the people that are going to be on the panel for the discussion coming up on March 22nd either does it for a living as in commercial work or in academic work. Will you tell us about the scholars and community members that are going to be joining you for the discussion coming up?
Absolutely. We have a fantastic panel that will be joining us next week. From Purdue Northwest, we have both the chair of the Computer Information Technology Graphics Department, Carrie-Ann Chang, as well as the dean of the College of Technology, Niaz Latif. They're both scholars and very well informed in this area. From the region, we have the president and CEO of SimCorp, Robert Johnson III. SimCorp is a leading company on cybersecurity software. And joining us from back east, we have from Harvard University, the Director of Education and Consulting for Information Technology Security is Sandy Silk. So I'm very excited to have these four scholars and business leaders joining us to talk about cybersecurity on the other side.
Mm-hmm. We've had the opportunity, in fact, on two different occasions to talk with Mr. Johnson in his work with creating and running SimCorp. It's a very, very interesting company, and he's very busy these days, probably the most busy he and his staff have ever been, especially since the pandemic seemed to boost the need to everybody to do Zoom meetings, because that's what he's worked with them directly on dealing with some of their security issues. Is this something that all of these people that are involved, obviously Mr. Johnson, but the others as well too, including the professors from campus, having to find ways to be able to confront cyber issues, cybersecurity issues?
Absolutely. And one of the things that are very proud of here at Purdue Northwest is the grants that we've received specifically for cybersecurity research and training. We have just received an almost $6 million grant from the National Security Agency, the NSA, to bring cybersecurity training to the region here in Northwest Indiana. And this program will train dozens of individuals in the area of cybersecurity.
How much of an issue has it become? Even before the pandemic hit, we had all this sudden explosion in services and opportunities to go online to do everything virtually, not from shopping for groceries to learning online to having meetings online as part of your regular job. Have we just found that this is just something that has just exacerbated the issue of cyber problems? Hackers found more opportunities to create all kinds of havoc?
Oh, absolutely. If we look across the entire realm, I think it's imperative for all of us as individuals and citizens to be aware of what our individual responsibility is to understand both security threats and what we can do to protect ourselves, our family, and the jobs that we work in. We see constant threats from foreign actors. There's huge information in the news we've seen recently regarded to threats around SolarWinds. Last week, we saw a zero-day exposure from Microsoft Exchange, where foreign actors are getting into our government agencies at the federal and local level, into businesses, into our higher education institutions, and really have unprecedented access to internals of these systems. That's quite frightening.
Can you talk a little more about what you do as the Vice Chancellor dealing with such issues with information services at Purdue Northwest and what the university has done to try to protect itself and everyone who uses the systems on campus, both campuses actually, Hammond as well as Westville?
Absolutely. Our biggest threats really come from end-user exposure. And that is typically done through some type of social engineering. While we've put in all the technical expectations that you would expect with firewalls and intrusion prevention, notification of the technology systems, it doesn't prevent us from the simple social engineering that we all experience on a daily basis. You probably see, it started, dozens of years ago where you get the email from, some foreign prince that's going to give you, $1 million. All you have to do is just give them your bank account information. These simple social engineering threats continue today in various different forms. So our biggest opportunities are around individual training and security awareness. Recognizing threats when they come in, what you can do to prevent protect yourself, prevent exposure, and constantly being aware of both new vulnerabilities and sharing that with your friends and family so that you stay protected individually.
Tim,
and as a family, yes.
Now, Tim, if you will, fill us in on where folks can check out the next edition of On the Other Side, dealing with cybersecurity. How can they watch the conversation coming up here on March 22nd?
You can go to the PNW website at pnw.edu/other-side. That's the website for the Other Side series. The link for watching the show next week is right there. It's a Zoom show, so it's open to the public. There's no charge. Anybody can watch it. It is next Monday from 12 to 1:15 Central Time. So you can go there, register if you like, and we will have the panel. There'll be entertaining questions from our viewing audience, as well as talking a little bit about their areas of expertise. And then we also have information on the Other Side site of all of our upcoming programs in April and May as well.
That's great to hear. Well, Vice Chancellor Winters, thank you very much for spending time with us talking about not only the one coming up next week on the other side, dealing with the issue of cybersecurity, the guests that you're going to have on the panel, and mention, too, that the fact that the series is available to take a look at. And if you're interested in viewing some of the others coming up, you'll find that, too, at Purdue University Northwest website, Purdue, which is pnw.edu, and find out more information there. Thank you for spending time with us today to talk about the next in the series of On the Other Side comments coming up.
Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate the time today.
You're welcome. Tim Winters is a Vice Chancellor for Information Services at Purdue University Northwest, and he's the moderator of the next in the virtual series of On the Other Side conversations about cybersecurity. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Saying that this has been a difficult year for educators and for students is kind of like saying that the Indianapolis 500-mile race is a race. Well, it's a very immense understatement, to say the least, because of the losses and loneliness due to the pandemic, rising levels of childhood poverty and hunger, constant uncertainty, and the pressure to be able to quickly adapt and adopt new technologies and all that, with the pandemic days maybe coming closer and closer to an end. What's it mean for Hoosier students looking forward? Well, Indiana Youth Institute President and CEO Tammy Silverman has thought about it, and she's put out a recent column about it. Let's check in on that column. Tammy, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio today.
Always my pleasure. Good to be with you, Chris. And well, that was the perfect opening, right? That was perfect.
Well, it's just very adapt adapt to what the problems are as all of our mode this time around. We don't have much choice, and we just try to do the best we can. And what are you finding out in the studies that you look at that you use to put together the report this week?
Yes. Well, first of all, you know, I think we are at that point where we can look. We're almost to the end of the pandemic, right? So we're not quite there. Not everyone's vaccinated yet, but we're starting to take a look and talk about what does this mean for our kids going forward. So one of the things, the first and foremost, is there's a lot of discussion about learning loss. What has been the result of all of these educational disruptions? And so there's a little bit of early data out saying there has been a percentage drop in math scores, particularly in grades 3 through 8. Mm-hmm. And that's not surprising, right? We know there's been a lot of turmoil and back and forth and changes and all those kinds of things. We're particularly interested in paying close attention to the fact that, you know, we're concerned that for some students, particularly Black and Hispanic students, it might be, and students that attend high poverty schools, it might be even higher. So we need to be paying attention to that. And again, there's a second study that talks about some of that learning loss. Now, the good news is right now our state legislature is considering a bill. It's House Bill 1008, mm-hmm. that would provide some funding to address that learning loss. And so, you know, we know that that's going to be an outcome, and that's something we need to pay attention to.
What are some of the ideas that are being floated these days as to what they can deal with and they can afford to do to help make up some of the learning loss that youngsters are facing?
Yep, great question. So some of the suggested things are scaling high intensity tutoring. So that's not, you know, once a week or ever so often. It's more daily and concentrated tutoring, creating small academic groups that can maybe instead of, could get together and work on things over spring breaks or summer breaks, that kind of thing, making sure that the school districts that are already pinched for funding don't suffer any further financial losses. And then building, you know, there's a lot of summer camps coming up, and building some additional academics into those summer camps are some of the ideas that are out there that I know folks are working on standing up at the moment.
Are there some groups out there that put out summer camps that can be able to take on that extra education? Some I know are not super adapted to it. They're more adapted to health and recreation more than anything else, aren't they?
Absolutely. Many of them are. But again, we know that kids learn sometimes by doing as well. So, you know, cooking is a great way, particularly for those younger kids, to learn math, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of measurements and things that go on in there. So it might not be sit down, go through this book or go through this PowerPoint or whatever it is, but it can still help stem some of that learning loss that's gone on.
Now, aside from learning loss, I know that then we've talked about this too when we discussed the latest Kids Count data book that's come out for Indiana about the impact the pandemic has on mental health, especially among students. What have we found in some of the research about that?
Yes, absolutely. This is something that's one of those things that's also concerning to us, is that according to the Journal of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry and Mental Health, we know that, first of all, kids that already had anxiety and depression before the pandemic, it has elevated those levels. In addition, we know there are other kids that, you know, because of the uncertainty, because of losses they have suffered, and because of ongoing fears, they have some of those mental illnesses are now affecting them as well. So we know we need to be paying attention to their social and emotional well-being, and also their clinical behavioral health. And so we need to, again, I know the state's taking some looks at that, but also our community foundations, United Ways, the local youth serving orgs are really preparing to ramp up to make sure our kids have the support they need.
Are we finding that as we find more school districts being able to reopen to in-person classes, that they have to take account of these problems that have cropped up, especially with mental health and do what they can to help youngsters?
They are. They're going to see it more firsthand. I will tell you, many of our educators already had a great sense that this was a big deal, right? They've noticed that kids are withdrawn or maybe they're not engaged as much, and they're going to be able to see it firsthand and maybe get a better handle on the scale of it. But they've been pretty tuned in and sharing their concerns for several months now.
And I know we've talked about this in past, about the fact that it's not only the youngsters, it's also the teachers and the administrators that need a little help too. They certainly need a pat on the back. They've gone through an awful lot, haven't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, we always focus on the kids first, and we know our educators do, but we cannot lose sight of the fact that our teachers, counselors, the administrators, everyone working in the schools have just stepped up this year. I mean, everything from changes in their schedules to new technology, all the safety requirements, all of that. So we also know that there's data coming in that many of those educators, not surprisingly and totally understandably, are also feeling stressed and burnt out. So there's, you know, we link to some ways that we can support educators in our article, and, you know, there's also a bunch of free resources there to help those teachers and educators.
And I guess in closing, that's all we can say, that to just keep supporting everybody, not only the young people, but the grown-ups, too, that have to deal with the pandemic and the educational impact of it, too.
You bet, Chris. And it's going to take a little while for us to address all of these needs, and that's okay. We just have to stay at it.
Tammy Silverman is the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute. And Tammy, as always, thank you for being with us today.
Always my pleasure. Thank you.
And now we continue our reflection series exploring how the lives of Midwesterners have been changed by the coronavirus pandemic. Agatha Walston is a nurse at a long-term care facility. She kept working, and that took a toll on her and her family. And she talks about it in a story that was produced by Side Effects Public Media's Farah Usery.
My name is Agatha Walston, full-time working registered nurse of two incredibly difficult children who I love very much. I live in Clarksville, Indiana, and commute 20 minutes to and from work in Louisville. And it was that evening, well, afternoon, March 16th, we had a mandatory staff meeting where we locked the residents down into their rooms, and nobody was in, out of their rooms in case we had it in the building. I remember being scared, but because I have a different relationship with mortality because of being a type 1 diabetic since I was 8, it was less scary for me. If I die, I do die. I just want to make sure my kids are taken care of. The gentleman that had left the building in early March was very close with me. I loved this guy so much. He was awesome. He was just one of those dirty old men that he just keeps you laughing. But when he got sick with COVID, he was just so sick. He couldn't get out of bed. And he was the first one to go behind the curtain. And that was the last time I saw him, was in that wheelchair with my CNA, my favorite CNA, rolling him back there. And he was scared. I remember calling his daughter when we'd send him out to the hospital. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know anything. Nobody knows anything about this bug, but this is bad. And then she wanted me to call and explain everything to her son, his grandson, who's 23 years old. and he took it like a man. And he appreciated and he thanked me for calling him. And it was really painful because I know he just wanted to see his grandfather one more time. And I still look up his obituary just from time to time, and that was rough. I got my nose swab on April 13th and my test results came back on April 15th. So I got my positive test and I remember thinking, well, I'm just going to work until they won't let me work anymore or until I'm dead. And at the time, CDC had said, you know, the positive can care for the positive as long as they're not, you know, symptomatic. And that's when I had the conversation with my children and my parents and my sister and my best friend. And I said, 7 days on a ventilator. If I'm not working after 7 days, if I'm not getting any better, pull the plug, give it to somebody else. So if I wasn't at work, I was sleeping. So my children, they just didn't get to see me. What my daughter went through, she ended up being in the inpatient mental hospital over here and tried to kill herself. My son, he got suspended from school. It was probably about a month ago because he had made the comment, I was off work that day, and he made the comment, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to go home and spend the day with my mom because she's off work.
Gotta show my face. Been elusive for so long. This freedom is mine today. Step out on.
I have an anthem. I sing it whenever I need that lifting up. Roll the windows down, no matter how cold or hot it is, and I will belt it out while I'm driving my way to work.
Look what I have found. I found strength, courage, and wisdom. It's been inside of me.
Agatha Walston is a nurse at a long-term care facility. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.